fight for this title. And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Yes, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Warm Down today. Delighted to be joined by Raphael Honigstein of The Athletic. Raphael, how are you doing, mate?
I'm fine, how are you?
Yeah, I'm going a bit stir-crazy, I think, now, being locked up. But hopefully you're going to give us something to smile about, potentially. We're going to be talking about Timo Werner. We're going to talk about Jadon Sancho. And even though we're not linking him to United, a past link to United, Thiago Alcantara, and why maybe Germany isn't appreciating him as much as he should. Where should we begin? Should we start with Jadon Sancho? You've done an article recently talking up about the fee has sort of put off many clubs, but you think United are prepared to go all in and make him our number one target?
Yeah, that's the indication I'm getting. You know, it's a very difficult market at the moment with a lot of the big clubs not in a position to make this kind of move. United are one of the handful of teams who can pull this off right now, having kept some of their powder dry and being relatively inoculated, I think, from the sort of the sporting vagaries of what happens the rest of the season. Even the, you know, the Bayern Munichs and some of the German clubs, they all wonder, you know, are we going to be in the Champions League next year? Where is the money going to come back in? Some of them haven't received the latest tranches of TV money, unlike the Premier League. So some clubs, and I would include United among them, are in a very strong and very a separate position to everyone else. Everyone else probably couldn't really contemplate this kind of deal at the moment. United can, and that's where I think the direction of travel is quite clear. They can make it happen, and Dortmund, despite their public sort of statement saying, well, we'd like him to stay, I think are still very open to this deal being done.
Do you think, I'm going to have to say, I don't necessarily agree with United's position that they're going to, I mean, obviously they know their own finances better than I do, but I can't imagine that United think that they're going to sail through this without a blemish. Obviously we have enormous debt repayments, we still owe $250 million on transfers previously, the debt repayment is up around $450 million. Are United just banging this on the best credit card in the world or what? Because we don't feel like we're a cash-rich club at the moment.
I mean, you'd have to look at the finances a bit more detailed than I have done to give you a good answer for this. But I think the situation with United is that they haven't really been that dependent on the money that comes as a result of sporting success in recent years. Because there hasn't been that much of it. Which is good in one way, because now, and that's what I was trying to get at earlier, nobody knows whether they're in a Champions League or not, but it doesn't seem to really make that much of a difference as far as their planning is concerned. Now, I'm not saying that they can go out and buy 3 Harry Kanes and 4 Jadon Sanchos. That's going to probably be a bit too difficult. But to have one sort of marquee player in that price bracket with a way to, you know, downright the expenditures on the book is, if it's a four-year deal, then effectively it'll cost you $25 million a year if it's a £100 million player. I think United can quite comfortably do that. So they seem to be in a position to at least try and make this happen. Now, whether they will meet Dortmund's evaluation, I can't tell you, but I think Dortmund themselves will be realistic enough to understand that there's not going to be that many clubs in United's position to really drive up the price. So if United turned up as the only and therefore best potential bidders, then I think United, then Dortmund will take a very realistic view of it. And I think it's still more likely than not that he will go at that point.
Do you think there's a scenario where Dortmund would need the money from that transfer to stay afloat or to invest in other areas? Or do you think there's a need from Dortmund to sell for the money?
No, I think it's too reductive to see it that way, that, you know, Dortmund now need money. Everyone needs money, but they have negotiated a 20% pay cut with all their players and the executives to finance the day-to-day running and to pay the wages of the non-playing staff without having any recourse to furlough or anything like that. So they're in a position where, of course, they're losing money at the moment, But with German football on the whole being fairly optimistic, relatively speaking, that some football can return in a not too distant future, maybe mid-May, and then that last bit of TV money coming in, then the rest of the season is going to be fine for them. It is, however, part of their business model, and has been over the last few years, to supplement their income, their organic income, if you will, through sponsorship, through TV rights and gate receipts, with at least one big sale every other year. So, you know, last year they kept everyone, but the year before they had big sales with Christian Pulisic, which was banked early. The year before that, it was Ousmane Dembele. And Dortmund tried to make up that deficit that they have in turnover with Bayern, which is about 250 million euros, by getting closer with selling at least one player every other year. And that's why I think 2020 for Jadon Sancho was always, in inverted commas, sort of on the cards. Now, they would much prefer to sell in a market where normal rules apply, and maybe you'd have two or three clubs going in, or maybe he would have played a fantastic Euros and would have gone from a 100 million euro player to a 200 million euro player, who knows. But with the situation as it is, I think they're realistic enough to understand that, yes, he does remain a super high potential player, and they're not going to give him cheaply just because of now suffering a little bit financially. But at the same time, they have to adjust their valuation slightly to the circumstances at play.
I do wonder if there's going to be a drop in the sort of overall transfer value of players because of what's happened with the pandemic. And I guess it's gonna be a precedent set by the first few clubs to make transfers happen. If someone comes out of the gate straight away with a new world record fee for a certain player, the follow-on is going to be business as usual, I imagine. If someone comes out and, you know, I'm not sure this could happen, but let's say United managed to pry Dortmund for Sancho for somewhere in the region of 50 million, I think that'd make a lot of people sit up, and I think you'd probably see a domino effect, wouldn't you, then, of lower transfer fees across the board if that was to happen?
Well, I think what's more likely is that you'll see different stratas for different players. So the Jadon Sanchos, and there's only a few of them who will move in the summer, Kai Havertz I would include in that, maybe Leroy Sané, they will retain the value because there's such scarcity of these kind of players, both on the supply side and on the demand side. Only a few clubs can afford these kind of players, that I think they will keep the value. We might not see another Neymar, but I think the players below that, they will not go from 100 million to down to 50. I don't see that. But what could well happen, and again, this is all based on football not coming back anytime quickly, that the 30 million pound player will go down to 20 or 15. As it stands, I think it's more likely that wages and transfer fees will be depressed and will be affected. But I don't think it will be affected that much. If you think about the fact that we're likely to see sort of a third of the season being affected, or a quarter of the season, there will be money lost on the side of sponsoring, of gate receipts. But the majority of the money for the whole turnover will still be there if football does come back sometime in June or July and finish the season. So that 20% or so that clubs might lose might have an effect on wages and transfer fees. But it's not going to make that much of a difference for the top clubs and for the top players, in my view.
What's the reception in Germany been like to Jadon Sancho since he arrived a couple of years ago?
I think everyone is just happy to have a player like him playing in Germany at the moment. It took him a bit of time to really get going. You know, he didn't immediately sort of went straight into the first 11 and started playing really well. But you could see that the progress was very pronounced and very consistent. And he's gone to another level this year. I think also helped by the players around him. You know, he has such an unbelievably talented team around him, and I think you'd love to play along the sides of Brandt and Hazard and Haaland and Royce. There's just so much talent there, and I think it brings out the best of players like him. With Hakimi behind him, you know, bombing forward, it's a dream to play in that team. And I think for many neutrals, It has been really fun watching both him and the rest of the Dortmund team play. And the fact that he's so young and has been doing it so consistently, of course, adds just another layer of excitement. But at the same time, I have to tell you, because he is not German, I guess the hype isn't as big as it would be otherwise. Imagine sort of a 19 or 18 year old kid in England doing a similar thing. Yes, everyone would be very excited, but it wouldn't be the same as an 18 or 19 year old Raheem Sterling or Harry Kane. So I'd say it's a, for him, probably a healthier attitude. And the fact that he's been somehow a little bit isolated from the hype, being in Germany rather than being exposed to it constantly, I think is another reason why it's helped him, because you can just see a similar situation in the Premier League with someone doing well really, really quickly, how things would go absolutely nuts. And I think it's been the fact that he is in Germany has allowed him to have a bit more breathing space and a bit more growing space as well. You know, when he comes too late to training or misses a session or something, it's a minor story in Germany, because it's a player that is exciting and is a star, but people don't have an emotional attachment to him as if he was an England international in England doing the same thing. So I think that's helped him. In Dortmund, you are in the spotlight once the floodlights come on, and then you can basically do whatever you want. And even the media will kind of leave you alone, mostly. And I think that's been really beneficial for him.
Yeah, he's not going to have that if he does come over to play for Manchester United. There's been a couple of off-the-field incidences. Like you mentioned there that there's been instances of missing training. I also believe that he's been spending too much time in London, that or more time than Dortmund would be happy with him spending in London. Is that correct?
I can't tell you about the second thing. That's not something I've heard. Dortmund, as a rule, don't like it when players use their spare time to jet off somewhere. I mean, they're no different to Bayern. They take a dim view of Boateng, for example, going to Paris for a weekend to a fashion show. I don't think it's necessarily such a big deal. I think they still see that as something that you have to give your players a certain amount of freedom. But they would, of course, set him down and explain to him that perhaps he might be better off resting rather than jetting around. But it's not something that I've heard or seen mentioned as a serious problem. I think Dortmund have experienced much more difficult characters in the past. And everything I've heard about his application is that they see him as a young player who still makes mistakes, who hopefully learns from his mistakes, but isn't at that point where they feel, you know, he's jeopardizing his talent or needs to be taught a lesson or anything. It is true that one of the games he didn't play for in the Champions League, I think it might have been a Barcelona game, he was left out, according to my information, because also the team felt that the club needed to take a stance and teach him a bit of a lesson. But again, it wasn't seen as a necessarily a massive big deal. And it was seen, I think, as part of his education process. And his
tabloids process in England would have made a big deal out of that.
Yeah, probably, yeah. And of growing up. So they understand that he's perhaps slightly different and will do things differently than to compared to a German guy who's been in a Dortmund club for many years as a youngster, or understands maybe responsibilities a little bit better. But it's not seen as a huge problem, and I think we'd be wrong to make him out as a problematic character.
Another player that's been doing fantastically in Germany and was very close to signing for United at one point is Thiago Alcantara. And you've done an article recently saying that you think he's a bit underappreciated in Germany.
Yeah, absolutely. It might be slight media perspective where, you know, some certain sections in the media don't seem to appreciate him and maybe see him as part of the Pep Guardiola era, and, you know, whoever has an axe to grind with Pep Guardiola then now takes Thiago and kind of deflects. That's where the criticism or the sort of the animosity in footballing terms is directed at. But I think he's been undervalued and underappreciated because he plays the kind of game that in Germany is still not fully recognized, which is the guy that makes everything happen before things happen. You know, he distributes the ball, he keeps the ball, he brings the structure to Bayern's game. He doesn't fly into tackles. He's defensively much better than people think, but he doesn't, you know, run from box to box and sweats and bleeds in this kind of midfield general type that I think still there is a kind of fascination in Germany. And he is a much more quieter guy, but he's so hugely important for a team like Bayern who want to have the ball and want to have a good position and possession game that I think it would have been absolutely terrible if they were to lose him. And the stats bear this out, and I know that a lot of people inside football feel the same, but it's not always sort of reflected, I think, in the public perception of him. And luckily, I think for Bayern, the situation seems to be that he is close to renewing his contract. He's out of contract in 2021. There was talk of him perhaps going back to Spain, but again, a little bit like United with Sancho, Bayern are in a decent position that they know that none of the Spanish clubs can right now really make a transfer happen. So with that bit of advantage of having a concrete offer on the table, I think they're in a great position to keep all these players, including him. So that's where we are. And I think it's absolutely vital for Bayern, especially with Hansi Flick coming in and kind of reinstalling that that possession game, that they have a guy like him, because otherwise it'd be very difficult to play that way.
You mentioned Guardiola in that there. What's the perception of Guardiola in Germany? Because is he seen as a failure despite winning three titles?
It depends who you ask. I think most people will not see him as a failure because his Bayern team played on a level that had never been seen before. Yes, they failed to win the Champions League again, but some of the football they played in those 3 years, both domestically and internationally, was on a different planet, even compared with the Heinke's years. So I don't think most people will see that as a failure, but of course, ultimately, he and the team couldn't deliver as far as the Champions League is concerned. And then it's a question of why. Some people just say, you know what, these things happen in semifinals, you can get lucky, you can get injuries. Other people think there was something deficient in Guardiola's coaching, that perhaps he was a bit too cold, that perhaps he was a bit too dogmatic in his style. But that is a matter of opinion. And I think those who feel that is somehow his fault are much quicker to blame somebody like Thiago as well for when things don't work well, because they see him as an extension of Guardiola's thinking, of Guardiola's way of football. And they somehow maybe feel that this is not really Bayern or German enough, you know, that Bayern should be a little bit different. But I think there's a lot of people, certainly if you ask the players, they will tell you that Guardiola was hugely demanding, very annoying at times with his level of dedication and obsession with details. And perhaps he pushed them too hard physically at times, but they learned so much more under him than anyone else. So they still, by and large, hugely appreciative of what he's done. And I think in the club itself, they would have loved to see him come back to Munich. I don't think this will happen, but so, you know, they are probably the best arbiters of his time there. And they certainly don't see him as a failure. They see him as a guy who's taken Bayern to another level, even if the last step they couldn't quite take in the Champions League.
There's a book that you wrote a few years ago. Before we get into that, have you got any more books in the pipeline?
No, I mean, there's a few projects kicking around, but nothing as of yet that I can announce at this point.
That you can announce. That means that there's something at least that you're working on. All right. Right. So the book of yours that I've read, I haven't read the, what's the other one called? Is it The Englischer Fußball?
Yeah.
I haven't read that one. And I'm not going to read the Klopp Bring the Noise one.
You should.
I'm not going to.
You should keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
I did read Das Reboot. And I thought Das Reboot was one of the most enjoyable books I've read. In fact, I'm doing a video at the moment, which is top five books to read during lockdown on football, and it's in that top five. And I've got no qualms whatsoever putting in there. I think it's a fantastic book, and I think it's a fantastic topic that looks into the partially the admin, but the coaching setup and the technical development of coaching and thinking. And I found it fascinating, some of the levels at which German football looked into to restructure and reorganize, to really keep a track of some of the players coming through. One, like, how much did you enjoy the research of that book? And have you enhanced your knowledge of that side of the game since that book's come out?
Yeah, absolutely. It was hugely enjoyable researching it. I had a hard time writing it. There was a lot of pressure in terms of making a deadline and so on. I did not enjoy that. But the research, the ability to go to someone like Ralf Rangnick or Dietrich Weise and say, you know what, I want to understand what it is you did 20 years ago and why that is relevant for Germany now was great. And what I found, not just with this book, but also with others, was that people are very open when it comes to collaborating on a book, because they understand that this is something that lasts, that gives them a platform, and that isn't unlike a story that you write online or in a newspaper, that isn't just kind of gone the next day. And as a result, they've been, by and large, tremendously open and forthcoming. And yeah, having the ability to talk to these guys was hugely enjoyable, and I learned so much. I didn't know all the details. I knew the vague story, but I didn't know the ins and outs, and I certainly didn't understand all the also all the sort of the issues around the World Cup itself, because there are two parts to this book. One is indeed how Germany kind of made the changes in the 21st century to become competitive again, but also how everything culminated and played out in Brazil on the ground, and these two things kind of feed off each other. And again, the ability, or you know, the possibility to speak to people who were there and to give you sort of the inside track of how it felt to be on the ground and stuff, it was just wonderful to listen to them.
You got it out the year after the World Cup win, didn't you?
Yes.
When did you start it?
So I started more or less once Germany had won it. I believe it or not, I got a call the next day from someone saying, do you want to write a book about this? I think we did sign the deal maybe in August that year. So I started kind of writing in earnest in September, or at least do the research. And then it took me almost a whole year. I think I finished in July of 2015, and then we came out in October of that year. So it was a really lengthy labor of love, but ultimately a book that I'm really, really proud of.
Yeah, I think even whether you care about international football, I don't really think it's an international football book. I think it's more of the progression of the game of football, isn't it? And the scientific and analytical side of it, and even some of the way scouting and recruitment's done. It goes into so many different facets. I found it absolutely fascinating. I really enjoyed it. And as I said to you before we came on air, I was like, was Mertesacker massively involved in this? Because he seems to get mentioned way more than you would imagine Mertesacker to get involved in this book. And you've said, obviously, you sat down for a lengthy amount of time with him. He had a lot to say as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, he was very generous with his time, but also he is one of the most eloquent and interesting people that you can talk to, because he is very reflective. And, you know, having him as a big voice alongside, for example, Philipp Lahm, who was just as exciting and interesting, and Oliver Bier, for example, was absolutely pivotal, because you need that kind of, how did it feel in the dressing room? How did it feel for somebody like him to play throughout the group stage and then getting dropped just when things become exciting in the quarterfinal? And how he told me he didn't sleep the whole night. I mean, that's just him. He's just such an interesting guy to talk about when it comes to football. And also, again, you know, he started in 2006. That's when he was called up as a very young guy to suddenly play for Germany. In a team that nobody really felt had much hope of doing anything at the World Cup. A lot of people were afraid that they might embarrass Germany. But with him starting and then finishing in 2014, his personal career is also kind of sums up some of the arc and development of this team from this kind of really young, unrefined, kind of wild but exciting team to a team that was then finally in a position 8 years later to win the trophy, which is another reason why I think he had to feature quite prominently.
Timo Werner is a player that you could say is a benefit of the new modern German football system. And he's currently being linked with United, Barcelona and Liverpool, to name just a few of the teams that he's being linked with. Much like Dortmund's business plan is probably to recruit young and sell for high profit, RB Leipzig are also very much in that sort of model as well. That being the case, do you expect Timo to move whenever we get a transfer window that's open? And where do you think the likely destination for that will be?
Yeah, I mean, Leipzig are in a slightly different position because they would have, I think, really liked to keep Timo Werner, but they're realistic. He was very close to leaving in the summer. A deal with Bayern was all but done between him and Bayern. But Bayern ultimately then said they wanted to concentrate on Leroy Sané and never came back for him. And then he, under quite a bit of pressure by the club, signed an extension deal to his contract, but with a release clause. And the release clause, no one's ever really been able to get to the bottom of it as far as the correct figure is concerned, maybe because they're sort of leverage stages as far as his performances are involved. But it's around about €60 million, so around about £50 million, which before the lockdown for a player of his ilk was an absolute bargain. Now I think things have changed slightly, in as much that even that might be too much for Barcelona side that is hemorrhaging money. Certainly not too much for Liverpool or Man United, but I think even Liverpool find it difficult to put everything in place to make that deal happen. Not so much for financial reasons, but for example, it's well documented that Klopp always wants to sit down with these potential players and talk to them. Right now, you can't really do that. You can do it over Zoom or Skype, but it's not quite the same. So there are reports in Germany today that that's one of the reasons why things are being delayed a little bit. But if you ask me, I still expect him to go to Liverpool. I think that's still the most realistic destination for him. I think it would be a great addition to the front three that they already have. Would allow Klopp to rotate a bit more. Would allow him to grow into this without perhaps having the pressure of being a starter and a real big player right away. I think that would be good for him as well. And Bayern, who were interested in him, still seem to believe that Sané is a much more exciting and sort of a worthy target for them as far as their strategic planning is concerned. So it looks as if Werner to Liverpool will be done at one point. But again, these are things that, because of the situation, I think slightly more clouded and slightly more up in the air than it otherwise would have been. I think I'd still be quite confident to say that this is going to happen.
Yeah, it never really felt like it was a possibility for United. Obviously, we saw Haaland go to Dortmund, and I think quite a few of us, and I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer amongst one of them, thought that we was getting Haaland. I think that they came away thinking that that was a deal that they was going to see. If Haaland's a choice and in that sort of figure, I could see Werner being a target for United, but I haven't seen anything that makes me feel like this is a legit target. It's almost like when his name gets chucked into the hat, it's like, United are interested. I think if I was given the opportunity to sign Harry Kane for $200 million or Timo Werner for $50 million, there's an absolute no-brainer in my mind where we're going. And I would be bringing Werner in all day long.
I mean, I would certainly not buy Harry Kane for £200 million. I think he is a much diminished player and you might not get that much out of the $200 million. But I think that with the Werner, it's more of a case of where would he fit in at United? You already have a lot of wingers who are kind of not real center forwards, who love to play from wide positions. There's Martial, there's Rashford. He would be another one Of course, you could make the same argument for Liverpool, but I think there is a much more defined way of playing, and having a fourth guy of a similar quality would make a lot of sense. Whereas with United, you feel there are probably other areas where they need to strengthen. And having an out-and-out winger, for example, like Jadon Sancho, for me, should be an absolute priority. Werner can play there, but it's not nearly as effective there. So, yeah, it wouldn't strike me as the most logical of buys. He can play through the centre, but whether that works in the Premier League with the way United are playing, I'm doubtful. So it doesn't strike me as a natural fit.
Yeah, I think when you look at what Haaland brings and you look at what some of the other strikers that we've been linked to bring in terms of how they play, how they would hold it up, I think the more I watch of Werner, I saw him play in a 4-4-2 for Leipzig. Me and one of my friends went over a couple of years ago and saw him for Leipzig. Really thought he was an excellent, really gifted player. But the more I watch of him, the more I see similarities in Rashford's game than anything else. And I wonder, with us being, well, obviously already having Tony Marshall, with us being linked with someone like Jack Grealish, who's probably going to want to play the left-hand sort of side. We've already got Marcus Rashford. I think you're right. I think there's a stacking up of players that have a very similar sort of set of characteristics, which is why bringing in Ighalo or possibly going for someone like Haaland made a lot of sense at the time that we did that. But yeah, I agree. I'm not 100% sure that he's going to be someone that United get. But going for 50 million, I think it's nothing in today's money, is it, in terms of transfers for a club like United? So I would like to see us try, if he was available, and obviously prevent him going for Liverpool if that was an option on the table. Because, yeah, I think him rotating into the three that they've got, well, that worries me a little bit, I'm going to be honest.
I don't think you're in a position to worry about Liverpool too much. You worry about making top four.
The fucking sad truth of how real that is. Oh, my God. Well, they haven't won anything yet, so we can resolve ourselves on that. Right, Rafa, thank you very much for joining me. Where can people go check you out?
Best check me on The Athletic, of course, but on a Twitter feed that gives you the best sort of one stop for all the various content I'm involved in. So at Honigstein on Twitter is probably the best one.
And as I said, I'll put a link to Das Reboot. I'm not putting the Klopp one in. I'll put a link to Das Reboot in the comments. It's definitely one of the books that I recommend for while you're locked up and you can't go anywhere, because I think it's a fascinating read about how Germany managed to become world champions. The genesis of it was it the failure at the, was it the 2002 World Cup or the Euros in 2000?
Yeah, well, 2002 was a failure, but we still finished second in the World Cup. So that's a Germanic failure. No, the Euro 2000 and Euro 2004 in combination really drove a lot of change. But even by 1998, some smart people in the German FA could see that the good players were drying up. And that's when things got moving.
Right, yeah, it's like I said, it's a fantastic book. Definitely, I thought I had it here. That's what I was looking over there for before. I've got a pile of books just behind this monitor. But it's not here. I think one of the lads has took it to go and read. But like I said, check it out. The link will be in Amazon below. But Rafa, thank you for joining me. Hope you stay safe during lockdown. And I guess I'll see you very soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. And you. Take care.